Page 34. CCB Treasure, Winifred Downing, by Judy Wilkinson. She is 85 now, and her health is frail, but her courage and spirit are as strong as ever. You know that memory thing I was talking about? Well, I can't remember when I first met Wynne, but probably at a meeting for blind teachers or during one of those all-night resolutions writing sessions. How, when, and why did the organized blind movement become important in your life? Page 35. I was born and raised in Chicago. If there was at that time any kind of Council of the Blind, I didn't know about it. But when I came to San Francisco in 1954 to take a job at the Orientation Center, Alan Jenkins, Kenneth Jernigan, Ten Breck, all those people were very much on board, and we heard a whole lot about the organization. Kenneth Jernigan taught a course concerning blind law, and he certainly included information about the organization. I dropped in on a lot of those classes because I was hired to teach home management, but when I got there, there wasn't anything to teach with. No desk, no ironing board, no stove. I had to make myself look busy for quite a long time. At that time, the NFB paid the way to the convention of someone they hoped would be interested in the organized blind movement. At my first convention, I met Dr. Newell Perry. While we were talking, his sister was trying to get him to go to their room because she was tired. He chastised her. "Don't interrupt me. I'm talking with a young lady." While home with her new baby, Wynne says she learned a great deal about the organization by spending countless hours transcribing materials they wanted into Braille. When asked about people who inspired her, Wynne recalled Dolly Glass, one of the few blind people she knew of, who operated her own business, an answering service. Wynne says she thinks the real treasures are those who work in the competitive world rather than those who, like herself, worked in the blindness field her entire life. I told her she wasn't going to get out of being a treasure that easily. Page 36. Asked about other mentors. Wynne praised Lawrence Muzzy Marcelino, important in the NFB we broke away from, who taught her to write resolutions. And I've been on resolutions committees every place that I've been until 2 years ago. Discussing other areas where she was active, she says that what with the long illness of Glenn, her husband of 18 years, also visually impaired, and raising four children, she didn't attend many conventions until after his death in 1973. She served on numerous committees and projects relating to the education of blind children. For years, she was a member of the Low Incidence Disability Advisory Committee, an organization put together by Phil Hatlin, longtime educator of the visually impaired. She gained much information useful to the CCB's efforts on behalf of blind children. When asked what she considers her most important contributions to the organization, without a doubt, editing the Blind Californian for 10 years. When you edit the BC, you become part of everything that happens that is of any kind of note. You can't be lackluster in your enthusiasm. You have to be on all the way. So I think that was the thing I did that was the most valuable and also what I enjoyed the most because I'd love to write. Page 37. Her thoughts on ACB or CCB's greatest achievements, being able to stick to their guns. We've learned we can never have a president for life. She mentioned how ACB and CCB fought off the NFB lawsuit against Bay Area Rapid Transit's providing detectable warning edges. In regard to the CCB particularly, she says the hardest thing is keeping dedicated people involved. I do think the organization doesn't work as much as we should on education. We're still pretty good about legislation, but we aren't very attentive to the education problem. In response to a question about major challenges for the organized blind today, Wynne says, I don't think the challenges really changed that much. The things that we were distressed about when I was growing up, education and employment, are still issues concerning us today. As to advice for advocates and emerging leaders, Wynne was adamant. Well, somewhere or other, they have to get their blindness skills down. Page 38. As an example, she referred to New York's former governor, David Paterson. He made himself sound like he was great because he never fooled around with that braille his parents paid for readers. He was really giving a lot of power to sighted people who he thought were doing his bidding. No one knows if they were, and he doesn't know either. She was referring to his technique of each night reviewing materials prepared for him. He had no ability to take notes. I don't know how he did what he did. So I think where we do ourselves the first damage is not saying we're blind, and we're not apologizing for that. We're going to use our equipment. We need to. And we're going to do that, and we may look blind or not, but that's not the issue. It's what you can do. The next question was, away from ACB and CCB, who are you? Well, that was hard because so many of her activities involved issues so dear to her heart. She served on the board of the San Francisco Lighthouse and volunteered at the San Francisco Library. For the past 10 to 12 years, she has devoted countless hours to NUBS, Nemeth Uniform Braille System, strengthening people's acceptance of it. This system binds together literary braille, computer braille, and the Nemeth math system in such a way that the learner can start with literary braille and go on to the others if and when needed. Page 39. A true enthusiast, Wynn points out that today a braille learner must remember 3 different dollar signs and 2% signs and so forth. BANA, Braille Authority of North America, is pursuing study of this code. While Wynn knows it can't make a difference for her, she feels that we must make the Braille system easier to learn. When pressed for other interests, without hesitation, Wynn says, "My family always has come first, and the thing that I'm proudest of is my family. We have a very devoted family where the people are concerned with each other, where the brothers and sisters and the people they married liked all the other people. We don't have this business of, well, John won't come because Jane is coming." Wynn recalls, "We were married in 1954, and in 1955 we had Christine. In 1956 we had Michael. Steve and Eileen followed soon after. We had 4 children in 5 years. Widowed when her eldest was a senior in high school and the youngest in 7th grade, she supported them by increasing her employment as a teacher with the Hadley Correspondence School to full-time. She has 12 grandchildren, the oldest 28, and the 3 youngest 18, all freshmen at various colleges. She has much of her loving family nearby. Son Michael, a fine carpenter and a voracious reader, takes her to church each week in her wheelchair and lives only a block and a half away. Eileen is just over a mile away. Christine, a nurse whose daughter also pursues the same profession, resides in Napa. Only Steve is far away in Montana. Finally, I ask Wynn about her health. I can't really walk at all now by myself. For this reason, she's been unable to attend conventions in recent years, though we saw her for a few hours last spring in Burlingame. She uses a 3-legged cane in her home. Her nearby family often cooks for her, and just this week she has hired some in-home help. She is in a great deal of pain, but just an hour before we spoke, she learned that she is a good candidate for a spinal cord stimulator, a device which allows the brain to block pain sensations. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, Wynn, and be in no doubt that the CCB will always be better off for the dedicated years you have given to it.